What a beautiful day. This is, and I mean that both sarcastically and seriously. It's raining and it's got that overcast, dark feel here in Seattle. Wednesday, the 22nd of April. This is the Inside CP weekly episode. Let me grab in, bring in the person who's joining us here. You there, Matt?
Can you hear me?
I can hear
What's going on, man? Good morning.
Good morning. Can you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, my name is Daniel Caseberg.
And Daniel, where were you born?
I was born and bred in the one and only Seattle, Washington, and I will be here for quite some time. No plans to leave.
Awesome. Where did you go to elementary school, Daniel?
Broadview Thompson, back before it was a K through 8, Whitman Middle School, and then the one and only Ingram High School.
Yeah, Ingram, that's what I was going for. I was driving towards that because my son goes there.
That's right. That's right. I love this, David. I love this.
And, is somebody in a very high political office in Washington State is an alum of Ingram.
Yes, a certain Gov Jay Inslee. Go around.
Yes, and you know what Inslee just did this? You see what he said this morning about Biden?
I saw that you put it in the Slack. Yeah, he endorsed Biden and said that he through like sourced a private conversation that he had had or a series of private conversations that says that it seems that Biden is more willing to go far further and higher in terms of climate policy aspirationally. So that is super exciting. We love to hear that.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really intrigued by the way that Biden is positioning himself and this candidacy. He has really demonstrated an openness and an interest in bringing together a wide coalition and trying to build a progressive world. And lots to go. We're going to have to see in all of this, but I think the early signs of who he is going to be as a leader. Are very promising.
Yeah, I think especially so after Senator Sanders dropped out, we really started to see that messaging just like increase, and a lot of his social media and everything is very it's lots of pictures of folks on the debate stage, very united front, and it's cool to see. I think it's really kind of what it's really what the party needs. So it is encouraging. You're right.
Well, hey, what I want to do in this episode of CP or of the With CP podcast, with the series every week we do an Inside CP episode, and I wanted to take you, I want to dive into our advocacy initiative and our remote field work, and those two things, they get bunched together in a sentence. So when someone hears them, they just kind of have them run together. But there are really two things that are related but are distinct in our work: advocacy and remote field work. And you are at the center and the front of both of these. And we've been working really closely on this, and we got lots of volunteers that are engaged in it. So I want to talk about each of them, and this is partly just an overview of it, but also a little bit down in the weeds is an update for people that are already supporting these two elements. Does that sound cool?
Yeah, man, that sounds great. I'm happy to be on. And thanks everybody for listening in.
So let's start with the advocacy work. When you go to our website, cpnow.org, and you go to the forward slash or the, to the link at the top of the page, that's the advocacy link. You come upon a page that has four steps in it. Four steps that we hope are pretty self-explanatory and people can walk through. What are those four steps, Daniel?
Awesome. So those four steps at cpnow.org/advocacy are going to walk you through what we like to think is a pretty simple step-by-step process for getting involved and engaging with elected officials across the country. So the first step would be it's a little sign-up form, so you just let us know who you are and give us a way to contact you, and it just shows us that we have X amount of people doing this work, and I'll have that update in a little bit here. So that's just a sign up, and then you can go ahead and get started immediately after step one. And that would be step two is we've gone through and cataloged contact information for four officials in each of the 27 states that we're choosing to target. And all of that will exist in a PDF that allows you to click through. And so we have Washington, D.C. office phone numbers, local office phone numbers, email addresses and email portals, as well as Twitter handles for the four elected officials across 27 states. And so rather than have you go and look up all of this stuff, we just decided we want to make it easier and just have it live in all in one central location. So that is step two, pulling up your contact information. Step three, we've also given you a place to start with a couple of scripts and templates for emails, phone calls, and for tweets. By no means do you need to use these, but they're just a good place to get started no matter where you're at on a spectrum of outreaching and engaging elected officials. And then step four, and probably the most important thing, is we need to be able to track all of the contacts that we're making just so that we have an idea of, and you know, how well we're doing, whether this effort is working over time, and just really how many people are participating in this effort. And so there's a Google form that you'll use. It's a contact log form, pretty easy to navigate. And basically what that does is every time that you do work where you're contacting an elected official, when you're done for the day, all you want to do is just go to this contact log form and just make a checkbox for all the people that you contacted that day. And you submit it. And then whenever you pick it back up again, you just do the same thing when you're done. So just so that we know how many folks are doing the work and how many folks are really engaged in this process. So we appreciate you doing that because it's helpful for us to see for our metrics. And those are the four easy steps. And then we also have my email, and we'll have a general volunteer help email coming as well, so that if you have any questions, something isn't making much sense, then you can just reach out to us and we'll get your question answered.
Cool. Just a second. I just want to say thank you to our mail carrier here. Thanks for your work.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So Daniel, in that four-step process, when someone signs up to for number one and they put their name in, are they waiting for you to get back to them, or could they just move right ahead into two, three, and four?
They can move right ahead just into two, three, and four. They don't need me. I can, and that's the great part, is you can just go ahead and you can get started and start doing it at your own pace. And theoretically, you don't need anything from me, but you're always welcome to reach out. And ask any questions at any time.
Okay. And the essence of this work is we are contacting these elected officials in these selected states because we are trying to move them towards more absentee balloting by mail and more early voting, because those are what the people in these states and around the country are saying they need, they want and need in order to feel safe and to be able to cast a vote. So that's our mission here, is more, it's more voting and easier and safer voting for this year. And so that's what we're doing. We're asking you basically to contact these folks and say, hey, they should have the chance to mail in ballot, and they need some early voting opportunities that are safe and are in a range of locations to be able to do it. So that's what people are doing when they're doing this, right? It's not a complicated message. You don't have to like unfold a complicated 3-point message about policies. It's just let's make it safer and easier for people to vote this fall.
Exactly.
So we're part of a national push on this body of work, and it's occurring at both the federal level and across all 50 states plus the District of Columbia, where the battle to make it safer and easier to vote this fall is underway. We're part of that. This advocacy work is at the center of that. So we're doing that, and I want to give some updates on different states and where what is the kind of steps that have occurred and what's going on there, because I know that people who are doing this work, the people that are doing this work are interested in knowing kind of how's it going. But first, how many folks are doing this, Daniel, with us so far, and how many contacts have we made?
Good question. We have, as of just this morning, we have 256 CP volunteers that are actively doing this work, which is super cool. And also as of this morning, those 256 people have made 7,401 individual contacts with the four officials across 27 states that we've targeted. So 7,401.
Man, so just a quick thing. Some people will ask us, hey, I totally understand why I would contact the senators and the governor and the election commissioner, which are the four people in every state we're contacting. I totally understand why I would contact them in my state, but why should I push and try to contact these folks in these other states? So why? What's the answer to that, Daniel?
That's a good question, totally understand where that question is coming from, and it's you know, I know that a lot of folks have been asking that. We know, I mean, we're really fortunate to live in a state with great early voting and vote by mail and really great expanded access to absentee. We know that where our senators are going to fall on this. We know that Senator Murray and Senator Cantwell are going to be in support of Senator Wyden's bill. And, you know, there's some elected officials across the country that make it very hard to hear from out-of-state residents. And there's other senators, governors, and elected officials across the country that are welcome to input from people from other states. And there's actually specific email portals or phone numbers for if you're from out-of-state. And so we are just trying to do our best to give people an outlet and a method to communicate with these people who are really the ones making the decisions for millions of people across the country. And it impacts us here at home because, you know, it's people being able to vote in places like Wisconsin and Texas and Kentucky or whatnot. It does impact us here in Washington, and so we're doing our best to identify those states and those elected officials where folks are okay hearing from folks who are out of state. Some won't accept communications from somebody with a Washington address, and others will, and that's totally okay.
And we know from the people that we're connected to in American politics at all levels of office that when we contact these individuals, we are not going to get a hold of the elected officials. They are not going to answer the phone. Mitch McConnell is not going to answer the phone.
Nope.
But the person who does answer the phone or who records the message that gets left for Mitch McConnell takes note of what the position is of the caller or the emailer or the tweeter. They take note of the position and they catalog just the volume of these. And it is that volume of push that they pay attention to. Like, this is how they interpret public opinion, is through the volume of engagement. And so I've been kind of doing a little check on this with different elected officials. Does, or their aides, does a, hang on, and sneeze. Does the volume of calls, tweets, and emails matter when you're thinking about an issue? And they all to a person, thanks. They all to a person said, absolutely, it matters. Do it. Do it. So we're doing it because the volume is the thing. And We are, I believe this, I know this, and I've seen it work before on the support for the Affordable Care Act. I saw it matter against the Affordable Care Act in 2010 with the Tea Party and how hard the Democrats had to work to overcome the opposition. And I've seen it in terms of the support for protecting the Affordable Care Act when Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and John McCain all voted against repealing it because they were feeling the contacts from people. So this is what the advocacy initiative is. So can you lead me through the states? And I'll give my best sense of if I know anything that's going on in the states about what's happening, because I am tracking this really closely. And I know for a few of the states, you're also going to have things to add. But if we can just do quick hits, we won't spend much time on any state, but just updates where we know them.
Yes, that sounds good. Let's go. Perfect. Let's go, I guess, alphabetical. I'm going down the list to try to find if there's any good states for us.
No, just let's just go through them all. We'll go through the whole list.
We'll go through the whole list. Okay.
Yep.
I'm just pulling that up, David.
Oh, yeah. Got it. Got it. Sure.
Let's... Give me one second here.
Sure. Well, so what we've done, folks, is Daniel and I created a database of the voting practices in all 50 states. And those voting practices chronicled, do they allow absentee balloting? And if so, how easy is it to get the absentee ballot? And then second, we created a follow-up database with adding in the support work of one of our interns, Kylie Knowles, to track the early voting practices in these states. So we have two databases for every state, the absentee balloting practices and the early voting practices. And these have guided our selection of 27 states that we're pushing for.
Yep. So here we go. We've got it. Okay. Let's go ahead and start with Alabama.
So the Alabama governor and the Secretary of State both have completely thrown down the gauntlet and said that there will not be absentee balloting in that state, but that they're open to more early voting, and they've had almost no early voting so far. In fact, they've been horrible on the balloting, absentee balloting, just really dismissing it out of hand as fraudulent and as terrible. But they're open to early voting in practice. So we nothing's happened there, but that's what I've seen in their comments.
Okay. Good to know. And that's not a CP state. And that brings us to a CP state that we're doing work in and traveling to, Alaska.
Well, let me just clarify. Alabama is one of the 27 states we're focusing on for this initiative, for advocacy. When Daniel said it's not a CP state, what you meant was it's not a state that we're currently planning to travel to.
Exactly.
But Doug Jones keeps like metaphorically calling to us. Okay. So, who knows? Yeah. Okay.
So Alaska,
is already a state that has high voter registration. They have a high voter registration because in order to get the permanent oil fund check on an annual basis in the state, you have to have your full contact information updated with the state. And when you do that, they also verify you as a registered voter. That's awesome. The ability to cast absentee ballots in the state is our primary focus for that state. I don't have any update other than just the kind of what I just mentioned. I don't have any update on kind of where they're at on that.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either. Arizona, which is it's a state with that had actually a wide use of mail-in voting in 2018.
Yeah, they probably are the most robust mail-in ballot state in the country outside of the five that do universal mail-in balloting.
That's right.
Arizona has, upwards of 70% of folks who have been mail-in balloting via the absentee route from the, for years. They are well prepared for greater absentee balloting this year because they're ready for it. And the Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, who we helped elect in 2018, is pushing for all voters in the state who's, who are registered to get mailed absentee ballots, not just to get the chance to absentee ballot, but to actually get mailed absentee, to get mailed ballots, which would be more similar to a universal mail system. She's getting opposition to that from the governor, the Republican, and the Republican legislature. So I'm not sure that's going to happen. But if we could at least keep pushing there, then we've got a chance. And we know that that state, Martha McSally, who's one of our contact people for that state, the senator, needs to hear from us all the time to let her know, like, this is what voting justice looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. That leads us to a state that, another state that CP does a lot of work in, that has Republican governor and legislature, state legislature, and that's Florida.
Yeah. So we helped to pass Amendment 4 in 2018, which restored voting rights to formerly incarcerated people who had been lifetime disenfranchised because of their crime. They immediately were, a new law was passed by the Republican legislature, signed by the Republican governor, that made it harder for those people to vote. They had to pay all their court fees in order to register to vote. That case is in the federal courts. It's being challenged as an unconstitutional poll tax, which I believe it is. I believe it violates the 24th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which has prevents poll taxes. That court case goes to starts trial on Monday in Florida.
Wow.
While that's happening, it is a reality that the primary absentee balloting group in Florida are older white voters. These are Republicans. And it is the case, though, that Joe Biden is doing much, much better than Hillary Clinton did among older white voters. So we want to push absentee balloting practices in Florida. We want them to be easy. Ideally, people would get all mailed either a ballot or a request for a ballot. That's a high priority. That's a state that the Democrats can win in 2020. So we absolutely want to push on the two Republican senators, the Republican governor, and the Republican secretary of state to let them know that, look, you're not just disfranchising people you don't want to vote. You're also disfranchising the people who you do want to vote. So make it easier for everybody.
That's right. That's right. Next is Georgia with a very low percentage of mail-in voting, and the former Secretary of State of that state is now the governor.
Right. Right. You recall that in 2018, he because of some practices he put into place, thousands of voters did not have their votes counted because their signatures did not match up well with their on a file official signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So for the upcoming primary, where the people running for Senate and down ballot are all on the ticket. For the upcoming primary in Georgia, the governor and the Secretary of State have approved widespread absentee balloting. That's great. They're going to make it easier for people. They're going to I think they might even be mailing absentee ballot requests to people. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's for the primary. We want that to be the case for the fall election. And so what we're hoping is that our push will carry through the primary and make them stand on precedent after doing it in the primary to do it for the fall as well. So we definitely want to keep pushing in Georgia. And I think that the reality of that governor and some of the challenges he's having around opening or not reopening the state, he's really been making mistakes, might push them to be more open to a fair ballot this fall. So that's definitely a place for us to keep pushing.
Totally. Totally, I'd hope so. Let's go to Iowa.
So the governor in the state, Kim Reynolds, wants no excuse absentee balloting to be widespread in the fall. It is already a state that has no excuse absentee balloting. You can request it for anything. But they want to open it up to sending requests out to registered voters. They are going to do that in the primary, which is coming up. the Secretary of State, who's a Republican in the state, has indicated an openness to considering it for autumn. So definitely, you know, we're in motion. And all of these states, we are in the middle of the push. And we just need to keep, we just need to push, and we're going to need to push well into summer, because these decisions won't get finalized until summer. So we're making progress, and things look possible in Iowa.
Totally. That's good stuff. And then another no excuse required state is Kansas.
Yeah, they are going to have, they are going to have all mail-in voting for the, I believe, for the primary, which is in June. I think they've announced that, but I haven't heard anything for the fall. I will say this, there is a great U.S. Senate candidate on the Democratic side, Barbara Beauvais, who's got a real shot to win an open seat there. It's under the radar, but she's a former Republican who switched to the Democratic Party. She's a doctor. She's really impressive. And so we, the more easy and safe voting we can have in that state, the better chance we've got. So push on the senators, push on the governor. The governor is a Democrat, Laura Kelly. She is going to support this work. So we got a shot there.
Cool. That brings us to a state that you have experience working in, David, and one that is an excuse required, and just a terrible record of mail-in voting at 1.5% in 2018. That's Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky has a really, really restrictive absentee balloting process, and they have no widespread early in-person voting. The only in-person voting they have is in-person at like the county clerk office. So very small percentage of folks voted either by absentee or early in-person. This is perhaps the toughest nut to crack in the entire country. Mitch McConnell is the senator there. But here's the good news. We have a Democratic governor who supports expanding absentee balloting to no excuse, or at least to allowing COVID-19 to be a legitimate excuse for the primary. And they've got this in place now for the primary. That Democratic governor plus a Republican Secretary of State who has expressed a real willingness and commitment to a fair election have made the primary a no excuse absentee ballot moment. And I think there's a shot for it for the fall. And if we can get that, if we can somehow push the governor, get the Secretary of State to basically do the right thing, even though you've got Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul as the senators, then I think that Amy McGrath or Charles Booker have a shot to beat McConnell in the fall. Without more absentee balloting, I think it's just a very difficult uphill climb for the Democrats.
Okay. Do you want to make a – just as an aside, do you want to make a guess in terms of who the challenger is going to be on the Dem side? Like, do you have leanings on how you think the primary is going to shake out?
Well, Amy McGrath is a national figure. She's a former, I think, Marine or Navy fighter pilot. Ran for a U.S. House seat in 2018, lost, but got a lot of national attention. Now running statewide. She has the kind of profile in which you win as a Democrat in conservative states. She's moderate. She's not cozied up too tight to the Democratic Party. That's how Beshear won the governorship. So I think that she's got a lot of money support nationally. So she is raising more money than Mitch McConnell has for the last two quarters. I think that she's likely to be the nominee for the Democratic senator position. That said, there is a state senator, Charles Booker, who's brand new, first-term state senator. And Booker is a progressive, and I really, really like him. He's more progressive than McGrath, fighting for justice on a whole bunch of fronts. I think that he's got a hell of a future in front of him. I think it's early for him. So I'd love to see him get like 30-40% of the Democratic primary vote if he doesn't win, so that he just kind of gets his name out there and sets the pathway for a future ahead of him. So I would say McGrath is the favorite. And Booker, I'd just like him to be a strong candidate. And if he somehow gets ahead and pulls it off, then that will signal that the Dems are really fired up for a more progressive candidate.
Cool. That's good. That's awesome. That brings us to another southern state with a Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards in Louisiana.
Right. And, you know, I had to learn when he ran for re-election recently, last fall, that, you know, Bell is not a last name. It's John Bell. That's how you refer to him. John Bell. Down there. Yep. John Bell is the name. John Bell. And then the last name is Edwards. So John Bell is a very popular Democratic governor. His approval ratings are very positive right now during coronavirus.
He's very popular.
Yeah. Louisiana, I believe they've approved all mail-in balloting for their primary. You remember they were going to hold their primary in March, and then they moved it. And I think they've approved all mail-in balloting for their primary, but I do not have a sense of what it means for the fall.
Okay. And we could maybe anticipate hearing something about that soon, but there's no way to tell. And that brings us to Maine, which is a state that you are particularly passionate about.
It's hard to rank these in terms of my passion, but yes, it's true.
I know.
Maine has Sarah Gideon, who's the House Majority Leader at the state level, as the Democratic nominee. She's running against a couple others, but they're much more marginal candidates, kind of perennial candidates. She's going to be the nominee against Susan Collins. And we're working with the Gideon campaign right now. This Sunday, in fact, we'll be doing a Zoom call with their lead organizer at 10 a.m. Seattle time that all CPers will be invited to hear about the work that we're doing with them and how we can support Gideon. Maine has no excuse absentee balloting, but doesn't have much of a tradition of voting by mail. This is going to make all the difference this year in that state. So we are very closely working with the Dems, the Gideon campaign on this, and they have a Democratic governor. They have Angus King, who's an independent at the Senate level, who votes with the Democrats. Susan Collins absolutely needs to be getting pressure from us to adopt kind of mail-in balloting and to provide federal-level money for this. So this is a state we should be pushing hard on to get mail-in balloting expanded in the state. They don't really do early in-person voting. That's not what they're going to do. But we can get absentee balloting.
Very cool. That's cool. That brings us to Maryland. With a very popular Republican governor who has a lot of national notoriety.
He does, Larry Hogan. Mm-hmm. And Hogan has bucked Trump on a number of things. Hogan, do you know the story about Hogan's wife?
I don't.
So Hogan's wife is South Korean. They met some many years ago. Came to the United States, is a naturalized American citizen, and they are married and have some kids. And she was a very high profile person in South Korea. And through his marriage to her and her contacts in South Korea, they've gotten 500,000 tests from South Korea for the coronavirus. Okay. Literally, yeah. Like personal relationships and Hogan's entrepreneurialism. And she is a rock star in South Korea now. There's like songs about her, and she's a celebrity because she's done this. She's gone and fought for these kind of tests and has taken the innovation and the strength of South Korea in getting ahead of the coronavirus and bringing it to America. So she's like huge there, and she's beloved as the first lady of Maryland. It's quite a story. And the president of the United States has been critical of Larry Hogan, saying that Hogan doesn't know what he's doing around testing. And Hogan responded, I just got us 500,000 tests, all right, for the coronavirus. Yeah. We don't need your help at the federal level because we got this. So we love Larry Hogan, okay?
Yeah, he is Hogan, really good to listen to.
he's smart, funny. Hogan is already in support of widespread absentee balloting for this primary that's coming up. I expect that we're going to get it for this fall. It's not one of our premier election states, but to get a governor who's a Republican supporting this is a major target of our work. The more Republican governors or senators we can get coming out in front of this, even if the state is not a crucial state for us, helps us. So keep pushing on Maryland and send love and support to Larry Hogan. We're not against supporting Republicans who are doing the right things. We're not against it at all.
That's right. And he's somebody who's like really influential because he's the chair of the National Governors Association, and is like really kind of looked to as like the voice of governors during this time, and such in a time where governors have a lot of like national notoriety. So he's got a lot of weight to throw around with other Republican governors that might be on the fence or worried to take on Trump at a national scale. And just his chairmanship of the NGA has been really good. So he's a good one. And that brings us to Mass.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that brings us to Massachusetts with another Republican governor who has had some good stuff to say about mail-in voting too. Right, David?
Absolutely. That's Charlie Baker up there. And he's a very popular Republican governor in a blue state, just like Maryland. And he, Baker has already signaled that he is open to widespread absentee balloting, not only for the fall, but also, not only for the primary, but potentially for the fall. And Baker, just I think yesterday, they just announced that they're looking at it for the fall. So definitely keep, that's a push for us because he's a Republican governor. And just everything you had to say about the importance of Hogan as an important governor. I did not know that about Hogan, that he was the head of the National Governors Association. If we get a few mm-hmm. of these Republican governors, and we did get one, we're about to get to the state where we've gotten one to support absentee balloting, that really matters. It really matters because governors and states have enormous influence over voting practices.
That's right. Yeah, that's cool, man. That's cool. We're getting to Michigan now.
So in 2018, we worked with a group there called Voters Not Politicians that got a whole slate of voting reform initiatives passed. Automatic voter registration, whenever you interact with the state, you get registered as a voter. Same day as the election voter registration. And no excuse absentee balloting, which allows folks in the state to vote absentee for any reason at all. That's what we're pushing for in all the states. And they passed it in 2018. This is the first year for it in Michigan's history, this election. But no surprise here, the Republicans have tried to fight against this and battle against it. Turns out that at the state level, the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and the Secretary of State, I think it's Jocelyn Benson, are both just really doing a great job. So those two, plus the Democratic senators, Gary Peters, who's up for re-election this year, and Debbie Stabenow, they need to hear from us and know that we support increased and safe voting for this fall. They're going to be with us. They're with us. But we need to affirm it. We need to support them. We can't just be calling people we disagree with. We got to call the people that we want to say, we're with you.
That's right. That's right, and that would bring us to Minnesota, where Senator Klobuchar is actually co-sponsoring this bill and leading it with Senator Wyden.
Yeah, and we have the potential in that state to flip the state Senate to Democratic. I think it's held right now by two seats by the Republicans. Absentee balloting would allow more folks to vote, make it safer to vote. Everybody should have a chance to vote on that. I don't have any update on that state, although maybe I do. I do believe that I've heard that they're going to mail for the primary. No. For the fall, that they're looking at expanding it to mailing absentee ballot requests to everybody. Certainly with Klobuchar there, they're going to push hard. They have a Democratic governor. Let's just be affirming to them and supporting to them about how important this is.
Totally. Totally, man. Let's go to Montana.
Sure. I know that, like, you even might be getting bored that we're going through all these states, Daniel, and you and I are nerds about all this, but we're just trying to give updates to everybody on these.
Yeah, totally.
I'll try to pick up the pace a little bit. Montana, the governor, Steve Bullock, is a two-term governor. He's running for the Senate now. He's got a really strong chance to defeat Steve Daines, who's a Trump-aligned Republican senator. Absentee ballot requests, which are present in Montana, no excuse absentee balloting is going to be a game changer, especially, or has the potential to be a game changer, especially among the native populations, which are particularly, it's difficult for them to vote in person during COVID. So with Bullock, he's popular. When you're contacting the governor, you are also contacting the person that's running for the U.S. Senate there on the Democratic side. So let's definitely be on that.
Totally. That's good. That gives it to Nevada, which is a no-excuse required state.
Yeah, we helped to pass automatic voter registration in that state in 2018, helped to get Jackie Rosen elected, helped to support the first female majority state legislature elected in U.S. history, all in 2018. They have a strong commitment to voting justice in that state. In fact, they're trying to put a ballot initiative, an initiative on the ballot that would really codify a whole series of voting rights. Steve Sisolak is the governor. He's a Democrat. Jackie Rosen and Catherine Cortez Masto are both Democratic senators. And the Secretary of State might be a Republican in that state. It's a state that we are committed to long-term. Want to make sure that they have widespread no-excuse absentee balloting for this fall. They also have a lot of early voting. That's been a dimension of that state that's really helped the Democrats. So we want to make sure that their early balloting is at least solidified and that they don't back off of any of it, that instead of backing off of it, they make it safer.
Mm-hmm. And grow it, totally. And yeah. What about the good news that came out of New Hampshire?
So the governor there, Chris Sununu, is a Republican. Sununu has publicly been against no-excuse absentee balloting. They have what's called limited excuse absentee balloting. That's, you know, very restrictive. But he has already committed to the fall to expanding that to no-excuse so that anybody can vote by mail if they want to for the fall. That's a done deal. He's made that commitment. It's been signed into practice. That's been one of our major successes. That's a Republican governor. That's a win. Now, do we want to keep calling them? You know, I don't know if we actually need to keep calling them and contacting them. They're a win. They're a success. We might do it to affirm him, though, to support him. So let me back up and say to thank him, to communicate our appreciation. And the two U.S. senators, both Democrats, Shaheen and Hassan, let's make sure that they know we're with them, too.
Totally. Cool. That sounds good. North Carolina, which is a big state for CP.
Yeah, this is a lot of action going down in North Carolina. So the governor is a Democrat, Cooper, and he barely elected in 2020, but it's been just really barely elected in 2016, really been vital for Democratic policies in that state. The legislature has been Republican, very conservative, and has fought hard against voting in the state. They've closed down early voting practices in traditionally African-American areas. They've implemented voter ID laws. They've just done all kinds of things that are been stopped in the courts. There's a crucial U.S. Senate race there this fall with Tom Tillis, a Republican incumbent, being faced by Cal Cunningham, who's a military veteran, a really strong fit for the state. It's going to be really close. The Republicans have publicly indicated that they will not support an expansion of mail-in balloting. They will not. So that's going to make it hard for that. However, early voting is a literally large practice in the state, and it's been where the terrain has been fought over voting justice there. And I think that that's where the push is, an expansion and a solidification of early voting, particularly for African-Americans who have indicated that they want to vote in person. This is part of their – this is what they fought for in this history. So the push there is definitely around early voting. I will say that a number of our folks who are calling and emailing – to North Carolina have forwarded to me the response they're getting from the Secretary of State, Jocelyn. I think it's another Jocelyn Brinson Bell. And she's a Democrat. She's really strong. She's put forward a very comprehensive bill that now has to go to the legislature. The legislature is going to veto, not pass most of it because they're Republicans, but they might get through some of it. So the battle is fierce there. The Democratic governor, the Democratic Secretary of State, and the two Republican senators need to hear from us.
Totally. And brings us to Ohio, and that is one of the first states to postpone an election and one of the quickest states to respond to coronavirus.
Yeah, it's a Republican governor, Mike DeWine. DeWine is conservative, but he shut down the state really early on from COVID, delayed the primary, and now they're going to have a primary, I think, in June, or maybe it's in May, that is all male. It's going to be all male. And that's a state where early voting in person and all male are both need to be expanded and solidified for this fall. Biden has got a chance in that state. Clinton got beat by 9 points, but Biden's got a chance, especially given the economic fallout and the way the tariffs have hurt the Midwest. So we want to make sure that everybody's got a shot to vote. So whether Sherrod Brown on the Democratic side in the Senate or Rob Portman, the Republican, Portman is a moderate Republican. He's open possibly to expanding and solidifying voting. So, and DeWine as a Republican has been pretty vocal about the importance of taking COVID-19 seriously. So let's definitely keep pushing in Ohio.
Cool. And that brings us to Oklahoma, which is not a state that we usually talk a lot about with NCP. And they have about 5% use of mail-in balloting in 2018.
Sure. You know, Oklahoma is a state that is an interesting state. It's like Kansas. There are some progressive tendencies there. The governorship, the Secretary of State, and the two senator seats are all Republican. However, in that state, Kendra Horn, a Democrat, won a seat in 2018 in the 5th congressional district, and we want to be there to support her. And we want to also see if there's some tendencies across the state that we can support. There have been a number of state legislative races that have swung to Democrats in the last couple of years. Here's a state that gets forgotten in the national dialogue. We want to make sure that we're calling and supporting increased balloting access. It's a state that's likely to be late in the curve on COVID-19. So mail-in balloting is going to be particularly important.
Totally. What about Pennsylvania, which is another huge state for the presidential race?
After the governor was reelected in 2018, which we helped, the governor pushed for, and the Republicans, because there are all kinds of good reasons they should support this. The Republicans, the state legislature, supported the creation of no excuse absentee balloting for the first time. We're seeing it for the first time this election, and it's a message we're getting back from the governor when we're contacting the governor there. We want to make sure that they stay strong with that, and we want to make sure that they ideally mail absentee ballot requests to people, and we want to affirm to Bob Casey, the senator, that we're with them. We want to make sure that Pat Toomey, who's a Republican and is not moderate, but he's not a horrible conservative, who's a Republican, that he hears about this. He's possibly one of the Republicans at the Senate level who could support an increase in funding for absentee balloting around the country. So we're definitely, they're like a Michigan. We want to have our voice there so they know that the first run through of no absentee is the way to go. No excuse absentee.
That's right. Cool. And then another very Republican state, South Carolina.
Yeah, we're there for two reasons to support them. Well, three. One, Joe Cunningham won in South Carolina first in 2018 as a Democrat, and he's got a chance to win re-election. He's a good fit for that district. That's the Charleston area. And we want to make sure that there's fair balloting going on there. And second, we're there because many African Americans in that state have fought for voting justice for a long time, and we're going to be always with anybody who's doing that. And third, there's a great Senate race there this fall. Jamie Harrison is a long shot against Lindsey Graham, but anybody who's running against Lindsey Graham is somebody that we want to help kind of have a fair election. There's a possibility in that state. They do have early voting practices. So our push there is mostly to support early voting rather than absentee balloting.
Okay, cool. Good to know. And now a state that is close to my heart, as I am the state captain for Texas. Let's talk about Texas. Some really interesting politics going on down in Texas, and lots of things moving on this issue.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've got?
Well, I know that that Governor Abbott has been the whole state has been slow in the response across the board to coronavirus. It was actually the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who is the one who outrageously claimed that people should be going back to work in order to save the economy, and that he and other people that he knew were willing to get sick and pass away if it meant that they left a better economy for their grandchildren. So, like, really, really interesting viewpoints on COVID and the outbreak from state leadership in Texas. And there's been a lot of effort from some grassroots groups, including the partner org that we are planning to partner with in the fall in Texas, Move Texas. They appealed, and in the courts, they won a victory that ensures that Texas does need to require mail-in balloting for upcoming primary elections. Did I understand that correctly, David?
Yep.
Yeah, and that was a huge victory for Move Texas and in many other voting justice orgs that were in on that appeal. And so that's a major victory. One thing that we talked about last week, David, was that it doesn't necessarily mean that the governor's really even going to do anything about it. And so that's one thing, of one reason why we definitely need to keep calling to very unpopular U.S. senators in Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, in just unpopular respectively in their states compared to other senators. I'm willing to bet that they're going to be falling on the not supporting mail-in ballot end of the spectrum, just because they're so unpopular in their states. And so we're going to have to see from Texas. One thing that you shared either this morning or the other day with me is that Texas's plans are including drive-throughs for voting, and everybody getting their own pencil, is something like that. Do you want to shed some light on this one?
Well, one of the challenges with any in-person voting is you would go in and you would use the pen or the pencil to indicate your ballot. You would fill it out and then you'd leave it there, the pen or pencil. The next person would come in. We can't have that in COVID world. And you also shouldn't be going into a location to even do it. So the idea of curbside drive-up voting has been done in some primary states already. They did some of it in Wisconsin, and they're open to it in Texas, where you just literally pull up, they give you a ballot, you show your identification, and you use the pens, and they're going to have special, like each one's going to have a specially marked indicator on it, like never been used before, okay? And maybe they're even going to be wrapped. They might be individually wrapped, I don't know. That'll indicate this. And there are at least three or four open congressional seats there that the Democrats have a chance to win. And then at the state legislative level, as you know, the Dems have a chance to flip the state house. So it's imperative that we get more absentee balloting and that they continue to prioritize early voting, which has been a big part of Texas for this fall. Texas is a reach state for us, but it's not out of reach. It's like possible. So we definitely want to push for it.
Yeah. Texas is the same place that on Super Tuesday, people were waiting in line more than 7 hours to be able to vote. In certain places, they have closed a lot of polling locations, especially in areas like Houston, San Antonio, Dallas. And that just can't happen when a lot of the major state legislative races that will be taking place, potentially for the Texas Dems to be able to flip the state house, are taking place in Dallas and in San Antonio. There are a lot of races.
Sure.
And so we really need not only the expanded mail-in ballots, but we need better early voting, and we need more polling locations, more safe and secure polling locations in Texas as well, because that's what we saw happened on Super Tuesday, and just unacceptable.
Totally. Yep. Texas, the way that Abbott has responded to coronavirus and the way that he's actually you know, saying that people, there are some things more important than living. I don't think, A, I don't agree with it, and B, I don't think it plays that well among the traditional Republican older constituency. This is a case where, again, Biden as the nominee, the Democrats have a better chance to make some inroads in that state than otherwise.
Totally. Totally. More on that one to come.
Yeah.
And I just really hope to be back on the ground in Texas this fall. Let's go to a good state with great partners for us, Virginia.
Virginia, our partnership there with New Virginia Majority is rock solid. They led us through the process of helping to flip the state legislature from Republican to Democratic in 2019 for the first time since 1993. And that state has passed so many voter reforms in the last 6 months with a Democratic legislature. It's incredible. This is like exhibit A of our long-term vision. One of the pieces they've passed is no excuse absentee balloting and early voting practices, both of those brand new for 2020. So we want to call the governor, call the secretary of state, call the U.S. senators, Kane and Warner there, and just affirm to them that this is they've provided a model for us. And let's make sure that they don't backtrack on any of that for this fall.
That's right. That's right. And then West Virginia.
So West Virginia, this is not one of our top electoral states. Donald Trump is going to win West Virginia. Newsflash. Okay, Donald Trump is going to win West Virginia. But there is a Democratic governor there, Democratic senator there, Joe Manchin, who is the end of the continuum towards kind of moderate, sometimes votes with Republicans in the U.S. Senate. We need Manchin to be supportive of early voting and expanding absentee balloting and federal dollars. We need that support in the U.S. Senate. We need the Democrats to be united on this. So we're primarily calling to the state of West Virginia to get Manchin to support this work. But I will say this, the Republican Secretary of State, this guy by the name of Mac Warner, has announced that he will support no excuse absentee balloting for the primary, which is coming up. And again, the primary is not our end game, but the primary is a step towards the end game. So let's keep our push going on there.
Cool. That sounds good. And that will lead us to our final state, which is Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, Wisconsin is ground zero for the presidential election. Whoever wins Wisconsin is going to win the presidency. We had this great success with the Supreme Court Justice Jill Karofsky 2 weeks ago. We had folks in Common Purpose making phone calls to encourage people and help them through the absentee balloting voting process. We had 1,800 calls and contacts come out of Common Purpose. Wisconsin is a state where they have very limited early in-person voting, and absentee balloting has not been a big deal. Prior to this past election, the highest percentage of mail-in absentee balloting in a Wisconsin election had been just about 20%. And I think that was in the 2016 presidential election. But in the space of 3 weeks with COVID-19, with a very, very proactive Democratic Party in the state, they pivoted to get people to request absentee ballots and then to walk them through how to fill it out. And it's really difficult to get absentee ballots and then to get them turned in Wisconsin. But still, 80%+ of voters in the recent election voted absentee, a remarkable increase. If we can get that similar turnout in 2020 in the fall, then that's a state that will go blue. And there's already progress being made in the state. The Milwaukee City Council has announced, their name is actually the Common Council, the Milwaukee Common Council, has announced a plan to mail absentee balloting request to every registered voter in the city. Doing that in a highly Democratic city will force other municipalities in the state and probably even the state to follow suit. And I think this innovation of cities doing this is going to be a major piece of this election. Cities will take the lead in mailing absentee ballot requests to their voters. Those voters are primarily Democratic. And as a response to that, the Republicans in the state legislatures or the governorships or the rural areas around the states are going to have no ability, they have no option but to respond if they want to be competitive. And of course, we want that. We want everybody to have these ballots. So Wisconsin, we want to push and support Governor Tony Evers, a Democrat who we helped get elected in 2018. We want to push the Republican Secretary of State on this. We want to support Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic Senator, and push Ron Johnson, who's going to be up for election in 2022 as a Republican. We want him to know that, look, voting justice is on the ballot in this country. So we are going to be pushing there long term around advocacy work. We're going to continue that.
That's good. Yeah, I hope we have better, even better news out of Wisconsin coming up in early May with a special election going on there for a congressional seat.
Yeah, so let's end.
So hopefully more good news.
Yeah, let's end this podcast by talking about that special election. So I wanted really to give an update on all of these states because I know that there are, you said at the beginning of this podcast, 200 plus people that are making calls and emails into these states, and we want that to get even larger. And so we want to give updates, and that's what we've just done on around the absentee balloting and early balloting. But I also intended to go through our remote field work in this podcast. We're not going to spend time doing that because we've already been on the call for a while here. But I do want to talk about lane one of our remote field work, which is once we push on the advocacy side to get absentee balloting and early voting, we want to make sure that people who are unfamiliar with doing those know how to do it. And that's a whole educational process. And that's what we helped in Wisconsin to do. And we need to help in Wisconsin for this upcoming election. So what is the upcoming election and what's our role that we can provide here?
Yeah, so we're going to be partnering again with the Wisconsin Democratic Party, as we did with Joe Kurofsky, the state Supreme Court candidate. And so they have a lot of stuff outlined for us in terms of they have lots of info on the candidate. They do weekly check-ins. The Democratic Party does weekly check-ins with volunteers for the sort of the state of the race and any updates that are going on. And they'll have pretty regular phone banks between now and May 12th, which is the election date. They have a couple of very specific like days of action where they want people calling all the time on a couple of days. So stay tuned for info about that from CP. Because that's definitely something that we're going to be engaged in for over the next several weeks, next 3 weeks or so, and that would be a huge one, and it'd also be a good test for sort of how the state is leaning going into November.
Sure, that's a district, Wisconsin 7th, that leans Republican. It's a long shot for the Democrat to win, so we go in knowing that. However, how close can we make it? This is a further test of our ability to mobilize people through absentee balloting. So we want to invest in that, and because we show up to fight in all of these places.
Yep.
So for those ballots, for that the absentee ballot support in our lane one of our actual remote field work, where we're actually doing the work to get people to vote. Will I have an announcement for that in Friday's email about how to do that for our volunteers, or are we already doing it?
I don't. I think Team Wisconsin is doing it, but I don't think it's CP-wide yet. So we will have something. We will have something in the Friday email that folks can get plugged in with.
Awesome. Yep. That'll give us 10 days before the election to make calls into Wisconsin to help people to absentee ballot. In Washington, it seems no big deal to vote by mail, but that is not a common practice in most of America, right? So people just need some education around how to do it.
That's right, and it just takes a lot of manpower or people power to be able to be making these calls because it's so many folks that they're trying to reach. And the Wisconsin Dems have been great; they're really good at giving everybody updates. We can definitely expect to see something in this Friday's email about how to get involved.
Great. Okay. Well, Daniel, we've gone through the whole advocacy initiative with updates here. Give a quick update there on our remote field work for absentee balloting for Wisconsin. These are going to be two major emphases of ours all the way going forward. Advocacy for at least the next few months, and then the absentee balloting support and early voting support work is going to be all the way through the election. These are major pieces for us. And you, my colleague, my friend, have been at the lead of this body of work. And it has been awesome to see you kind of jump on this and move forward with it. So thank you so much for doing this work for us.
Yeah, man. And thanks to all the volunteers listening in for everything that you've been doing. Just expect more from us. We're reaching out to all of the partners and then reaching out across all of the states that we work in to be able to do this at a large scale and make sure that folks have what they need to be able to vote. So thanks, everybody, for doing what you're doing.
All right. All right, man. Let's go back to work. Talk to you later.
All right, man. See
Bye.
Ya.
Bye.